Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 25th, 2014. And hey, guys, it's nice to be back with a working internet connection.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. With me today, I have the ever giggly Kelly Gumont. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Jeff.
And the cadence challenged Brian Chaffin.
That would be me.
That would be you.
That would be me, and I think it's hilarious.
It is, and only because it was really cute just how much it bothered you the way that I was just kind of flexing back and forth and handling the cadence of the intro so loosely.
That's right. There's a process here. It was designed to work a certain way.
And I was just being a rebel and working outside the box.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyhow, thank you so much for covering for me yesterday when I was stuck offline, you guys.
Of course.
Okay, so first topic I wanted to look at today, initially to me, was like, oh, here's just another guy that doesn't know what he's talking about. But then, Brian, you enlightened me on the nuances of exactly why sometimes an analyst might say something like, Apple is about to become obsolete.
Right. So the piece I wrote was about he's technically a managing partner with Norcoast or something. I'm trying to actually get the name as we speak. If you have it open,
it's Noster Capital.
Thank you, Noster Capital. It's Pedro de Noronha, and he made some comment that I'm sure it's actually pronounced much more sexy in Portuguese. He made some comments on CNBC saying that Apple could become obsolete in 2 or 3 years. And on the surface of it, it's just a completely ridiculous statement. And to be fair, digging into it, it's a completely ridiculous statement. But this isn't a Trip Chowdhury kind of thing. It's, the difference between Pedro de Noronha and Trip Chowdhury is that one of those people thinks that he knows Apple. They're both wrong about Apple, but one of those people thinks he knows Apple, and that would be Trip Chowdhury.
We should probably tell people what we're talking about with Trip real quick.
Sure.
And the deal is, I just love how you giggle like that, Kelly. It's awesome. It adds a ray of sunshine to my day. Okay, so several weeks ago, Trip said that if Apple didn't release or at least announce the iWatch within 60 days, the company was doomed.
Doomed! Yes.
Yeah, and he's said things like that on more than one occasion, too.
Right.
He has a long and storied history of declaring Apple's demise.
But he also has a totally solid track record. A track record of being wrong.
But yes.
Yes.
But it's a solid track record.
Right. And the difference between him and Pedro is, again, I'm not saying Pedro's not wrong, because he is wrong about Apple. But his point was, he was being asked about tech stocks on CNBC. And he was explaining why he doesn't invest in tech stocks. And the reason why he doesn't invest in tech stocks is that his fund has a value philosophy. So the companies that he invests in, he tends to hold the stocks for 5 to 10 years, and he wants to know where those companies are going to be in 5 to 10 years. So he's not, you know, he's not like, it's not like a day trading hedge fund. You know, they invest in a company for real. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't invest in tech companies because he doesn't know where they're going to be. He doesn't understand them. And his example was, look at Apple, a company that we all admire. I love Apple. I don't own its shares, but I own a lot of their products. I don't know where they're going to be in 3 years. It's a very competitive landscape. They might become obsolete in 2 or 3 years, as we've seen dozens and dozens of technology companies. Now, Apple is not just a technology company, and there's all kinds of reasons that one can look at Apple's track record. What did I name here in my story? I named Apple's history, track record, its philosophy, its unique whole widget business model, its recent hires, its acquisition strategy, its massive investment in its supply chain, and the pattern of innovation revealed in its patent applications. And that if you look on all those things, it's obvious that Apple is not going to become quote unquote obsolete in 2 or 3 years. But his real message is simply that that as a value investor, he invests in companies that he understands.
Right.
And he doesn't understand Apple.
He doesn't understand Apple.
Clearly doesn't understand Apple.
Now, what I expect is that there will be all kinds of news stories from Apple blogs about how this guy is an idiot or is improperly calling Apple's doom, and they're not getting that critical piece that you picked up on, Brian, which is that this guy does not invest in the technology market, and he openly says he doesn't really understand that market. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, which you had mentioned to me earlier, was that English is not his first language. So maybe some of his word choice is going to be spun in a negative sense unfairly.
Yeah, the word obsolete really doesn't apply to a company. It's going to apply to a product or a service, maybe a technology, but it doesn't, you know, what he really means is that Apple could fall out of favor.
Right.
And the other
piece of this I thought was interesting is that he was asked specifically about tech stocks because he doesn't invest in any of them. So they could have picked any company and, you know, he could have said the same thing about Google or Facebook or Twitter or Dell or HP or any of these, you know, any of a bunch of other companies that are considered tech companies that are traded on the stock market.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so the real moral of the story is sometimes it's wow, I suddenly feel like I can't come up with a really awesome way of saying it. But sometimes there's something deeper inside what these analysts are saying, and take a look and figure out what they're really talking about before you go off and call them an idiot.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm still usually willing to call someone an idiot. I mean,
but you do it appropriately, when we were dealing with some of Chowdhury's comments. There's a big difference between saying, "Look, I don't understand a market, and here's why I don't invest in this kind of market," and mm-hmm. And for all I know, this company won't have value or relevancy in 3 years.
Yeah, and also there is a difference between an analyst being asked a specific question and someone else saying, "I am analyst, all hail me," you know, like. There's a difference between offering it up like you know what you're talking about and then having someone ask you directly, why aren't you investing in this company?
Exactly. And now I'm going to use what you just said to do what I hope is a Brian-worthy, awkward transition.
Excellent.
Speaking of all hail me, Judge Coate, the judge that's over...
That was an awesome transition.
Yeah. So Judge Coate, she's the judge that oversaw the antitrust ebook price fixing case that Apple was in, and she's the judge that ruled in favor of the DOJ. She is now saying that she's really concerned about the settlement terms that Apple has agreed to in the parallel case, which is a class action lawsuit that's been brought against Apple by 33 of the states. The terms of the settlement are Apple pays $400 million plus, I think it's like $20 or $50 million for attorney's fees, unless the appeals court kicks back to Judge Coate at least part of the ruling for further proceedings, in which case what Apple owes drops down to $50 million plus $20 million for attorney's fees. if the case is tossed out completely or overturned completely by the appeals court, then Apple owes nothing at all. And Judge Coate is looking at that middle tier in this settlement agreement and saying that she doesn't think that this would be fair to consumers. And she also doesn't like the idea that Apple will not be in a position to be required to pay interest during the appeals process.
So my gut take on this, my gut reaction to this is that she has a very good point when it comes to the bit about Apple not paying interest. That is a pretty standard kind of thing when it comes to settlement agreements is that there's interest involved until stuff gets taken care of. But I think it's pretty hilarious that she's miffed about Apple having to pay less if the appeals court knocks any part of the case back to her. I just find that entertaining. It's, you know, like, LOL, so what, woman?
Yes. Yeah, it's...
Well, my first reaction to this was that she's making another move based on, you know, like, talking about this and stuff and the way that what she said is being framed. It came across to me like she's just hating on Apple more. And then Brian was saying that, you know, interest in a case like this is a standard thing. So that's not like out of the ordinary for a judge to raise an eyebrow at, what do you mean there's no interest involved here? And then I think it's entertaining that she's trying to use the, wait, if Apple pays less money, that's bad for consumers argument. I'm entertained by that, just like Brian is.
Yeah, the whole thing with Judge Coate, I'm finding to be very interesting because we have this case where on the outside, it looks almost as if the entire proceeding was more of a kangaroo court as opposed to a real evaluation of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And
anyone confused about that, look at the way Amazon is treating publishers and tell me that it's Apple who is doing things that are not good for book publishers.
Well, that's so the DOJ's stake in the case is whether or not Apple is doing something good for consumers. And okay. What is good for publishers is not necessarily good for consumers. But
that's true.
That's effectively irrelevant.
I can give you that.
I mean, yeah, I've got massive. I have whole sides of beef against Amazon on this publishing thing, as we've discussed quite often.
Yeah.
But
rightly so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't picked up on that, Brian.
Yeah, that's true.
Under my breath, I'm remembering the TDO from about a week ago and ACM from this week.
Just two examples.
Right. So I looked at the ruling or her comments, and as I was reading through them, I was like, man, this woman really has it out for Apple. And
yeah.
But yeah, then there's the comment about, look, and Apple's not going to have to pay any interest. What's up with that? And then I'm like, well, okay, people are complex animals, because here I am looking at someone where I've been in like very open disagreement with her rulings for a while now. And then I see that, I'm like, yo, she's got a point. And what I've been seeing though online is that hardcore Apple fans are just making a blanket statement about how her comments are showing that she's like a government puppet and that she just has a bone to pick with Apple. And that's not the case this time.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, at least was part of it. But I mean,
right?
I kind of, okay. I do wonder how Apple was able to get a clause in there that if some part of this case gets kicked back to her court for clarification, that they have to pay less money. That's pretty ballsy. Why the states agreed to that, I can't imagine.
Well, I have a hypothesis on that.
Okay.
And it comes down to expenses. So once the settlement was reached with these terms, the states really don't have to spend hardly any money to pursue this case any further. So it becomes a big tax saving thing for them. And then it's also a bit of a gamble. So what they're gambling is that the case will not be completely overturned on appeal, which means that at this point, for doing nothing more than waiting, they will get at least $50 million out of this and potentially up to $400 million out of this. And so I think they looked at the numbers and thought, you know, we will actually come out ahead either way with these terms instead of pursuing this as a continuing legal action where we have to keep pumping more and more taxpayer dollars into our legal strategy.
It's a pretty reasonable interpretation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and of course, no state attorney general has talked to me about this, so it is merely a hypothesis at this point, but it seems reasonable to me.
They didn't consult with you?
I know. I'm totally surprised. I mean,
do they know who you are?
Clearly not, and clearly they have no idea that I have played an attorney on stage.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, on that note, because people are now wondering, wait, you've played an attorney on stage? We're just going to wrap up and leave people wondering.
Yeah,
an excellent plan.
And we're out of time. So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Anytime.
And Brian, thank you. And thanks again for helping out yesterday. You guys are awesome.
Thanks.